Joining us now from Tokyo, we have with us a journalist. First of all, is our guest on the line? Yes, Robert Michael Poole, good morning.
Good morning.
From central Tokyo, first of all, how are people feeling? It's the middle of the night in Tokyo. The aftershocks continue, but the worst seems to be over for Tokyo, although much remains for the coastal areas of Honshu.
Well, that's right. There's a definite sense of unease still continuing here. As you mentioned, there's a lot of aftershocks, one again just a few minutes ago, and I imagine they're going to continue for some time. It's currently coming up to 11 p.m. here, so it's already dark. Of course, it's very cold here, and there's a clear sense of unease. Still, a lot of people on the streets as well, just because the trains are not running currently, and also I was just out a few minutes ago, looking at the sense on the streets with the shops. You know, most of the convenience stores they're empty right now of their stock. The restaurants all closed, so it's quite unusual.
So we're talking with Robert Michael Poole, who's a journalist for CNN in Tokyo. He's in the center of Tokyo where it's cold, and you started to mention the train service being down. Can you tick off a list of infrastructure that seems to have been affected in Tokyo and from what you know, the coastal areas?
Sure. Certainly for Tokyo, the subways and the Shinkansen were down. I know that Narita Airport was closed. Certainly a few other airports, of course, Sendai's been extremely badly hit. The phone services have been down until very recently, and in the last hour or so, people seem to be able to make phone calls again. During that time, we've been very lucky to use Skype and Twitter and so on to find out how people are. But in buildings like my own, the gas is still not working. So there's still quite a lot of infrastructure that's not working right now.
For the people that you speak with, Robert Michael Poole, in Tokyo, how much of a worst-case scenario does this seem to be for people of Japan, who, of course, learn to be prepared for a tsunami? But in seeing those pictures this morning, I just can't imagine what the Japanese are thinking in response to those images.
Well, as you said, you know, Japan is kind of used to receiving earthquakes on a regular basis. This was quite unlike any that we've had for a very long time, and kind of mixed reactions. Certainly, us here in Tokyo, it had a huge impact, but at the same time, there's very little damage. We're aware that earthquake was considerably stronger than the one that hit Kobe, the Hanshin earthquake back in 1995, and that one had considerable loss of life.
And indeed, the estimate is 1,400 times greater, this earthquake was, than the Kobe earthquake. We're just getting a report now that 200 to 300 bodies were found in a northeastern coastal area of Japan. That's just breaking on the wires now. Are humanitarian officials and government officials in Japan preparing people for the likelihood, based on the forces at work here, of discovering, you know, large areas, large numbers of bodies in places that were just so exposed and vulnerable to the devastation?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a bit of a mystery at the moment as to what we're going to find. It's obviously nighttime now. It's going to be very hard to search for people, and we'll get a sense of it when the daylight comes again tomorrow morning. But you know, we've seen the pictures. It's incredibly devastating. We've no idea how many people were caught up right now.
Something we're going to be learning in the next few hours as daylight comes to Tokyo after the devastating earthquake. Robert Michael Poole, a journalist for CNN, speaking to us from a very cold building with the gas off in the center of Tokyo. And those are some of the stories that we are following this morning, including the military situation, which is changing in Libya. There's also reports of a pro-democracy demonstration in Saudi Arabia that we're watching very closely. But stay with us.
We just got an update from what's happening inside of Tokyo. And to get some details on what's happening outside of the city, we have with us now Caroline Hawley. She's a world affairs correspondent for our partner, the BBC, and joins us from London. Caroline, the Tokyo itself actually emerged relatively undamaged, especially compared to some of the outlying, the communities that were closer to the epicenter of the earthquake. What's happening in terms of damage reports from other areas in Japan?
Well, that's right. Tokyo was 250 miles away from the epicenter, but certainly we are getting more and more reports now of casualties. You mentioned earlier that police in Sendai, the city nearest the epicenter, are talking of 200 to 300 bodies being found on the coast. We've got reports now of a major explosion at a petrochemical complex in Sendai. We know that 2,000 residents living near a nuclear plant in Fukushima have been told to evacuate. And in addition to a ship that was swept away with 100 people on board remaining and the people there unaccounted for, we are getting reports as well of a train missing, again, in the coastal region that was worst affected. And we don't know how many people were on board there.
And it's, in fact, difficult, as we understand, for even rescue missions to get into some of these areas because the roads have been affected. I'm where you have a report from a listener, actually, that Chiba, which is near Tokyo, is on fire, many of the buildings there, because of an oil rig explosion.
That's right. I mean, if anyone who has seen the television pictures, they are verging on apocalyptic scenes. You see this massive wall of water, dark with debris, in some cases with buildings on fire, all on the move. I mean, you can only imagine how terrifying it would be to be anywhere close to that, this unstoppable surge of water, which has now a reverse direction. But certainly a terrifying scene there, and I think it will take some time before the true extent of the damage can be estimated. We know that much earlier military planes were scrambled to go and assess the damage, and amid all the havoc, the Prime Minister appealed for people to stay calm. It sounds like, certainly in Tokyo, they are doing that and are remaining very calm, but you have millions of people without power and fires still raging. And there was the fire at the oil refinery outside Tokyo. And then you have this nuclear emergency that has been declared by the authorities as a precaution. They are concerned about what's happening at the nuclear plants. They say that no radioactive leaks have been detected so far, but clearly there is deep concern.
And there has been malfunctions at a couple of nuclear plants, one in particular, the one about which the official emergency warning was declared. There, the diesel generators did not fire, and therefore the fuel is not being cooled at this point. You mentioned that they scrambled military jets. The Prime Minister called for the entire military to respond to the rescue mission and the humanitarian crisis going on right now. Do we have any further details about the government's plan?
Not too many details about exactly what they are going to do, but as you said, the military put on alert to do what it can. And meanwhile, offers of aid pouring in, the UN saying it stands ready to help. Britain, certainly where I'm talking to you from, saying it stands ready to help. And David Cameron saying this is a reminder of the terrifyingly destructive power of nature.
Aftershocks continuing to go on in Japan this morning. So this actually is an ongoing crisis there.
It's absolutely an ongoing crisis. And certainly I think it will take a long while to find out the true extent of the damage. And of course, the key thing everyone will be wondering is what will be the eventual toll of this. And as we said earlier, the toll rising all the time with these reports of a train missing and the bodies found in Sendai, that city near the epicenter of the earthquake.
That's Caroline Hawley, World Affairs correspondent for our partner, the BBC, reporting to us from London.
We're looking at the live pictures of the waves off the coast of Hawaii, where the tsunami appears to be hitting right now. It's nothing like the pictures we got from Japan. Let's give you some pictures here, word pictures, before we go. A train gone missing, Carolyn Hawley just said. When have you ever even heard those words before? Just a sense of the huge forces at work. I live in central Tokyo. Tom David, a Tokyo resident and listener, said near two highly populated districts, the pylons and trees were swaying wildly. The ground didn't stop moving for at least 5 minutes. One of the witnesses of the 8.8 earthquake. We felt that all the way down here in Osaka, swaying slowly, gently, but steadily for over 3 minutes. Up north where it happened, several thousand kilometers away, it must have been huge. It must have been, and indeed we're witnessing that through the images and electronic information that's coming out. And there will be more of that all morning long. Tell us your stories at 877-8MYTAKE or post to our site, thetakeaway.org. Our thoughts and prayers with the people of Japan at this hour. I'm John Hockenberry.
I'm Celeste Headlee. This is The Takeaway.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.